Be advised, Turkey's presidential election seems likely to go to a runoff as no candidate has so far succeeded to win a majority vote and outright victory. Yemenis hold nationwide rallies to mark Nakba Day and to show support for Palestinian people in their struggle against Israeli occupation. Also coming up, the U.S. Deputy Treasury Secretary warns of a looming recession and the loss of millions of jobs if the country defaults on its debt. Thank you for joining us. Our top story this hour, the Turkish presidential election is very likely to head to a runoff as none of the candidates have managed so far to manage the 50% threshold to win outright. After around 96% of the vote count, incumbent president Recep Tayyip Erdogan has fallen below 50%. His main rival, Kemal Kılıçdaroğlu, is also trailing with 44% ballots. Official results will be announced after all ballot boxes are counted. Turks went to the polls on Sunday to elect 600 members of parliament and the next head of state. Some 64 million people were eligible to vote and a high turnout was reported. Staying with Turkey's presidential election, where the two top contenders are neck and neck as vote counting is still underway, incumbent Recep Tayyip Erdogan and his opposition challenger Kemal Kılıçdaroğlu have, however, expressed their readiness for a runoff. Addressing his supporters in the capital Ankara, Erdogan said he has a clear lead over his main rival, but is ready for a second round if required. He also took aim at Kılıçdaroğlu's campaign, saying they're trying to fool people with wrong figures. Both candidates have claimed to be ahead in the race and contested the early lead of the vote count. Meanwhile, Kılıçdaroğlu, speaking alongside leaders of the other parties in his alliance, said he would win the potential runoff. He also took a jab at Erdogan, saying he could not achieve the result he wanted in his vote.
Turkish citizens have cast their votes to choose a president and parliament members. Polling stations opened at 8 a.m. and closed at 5 p.m., with unprecedented participation, especially from the young generation. According to the Supreme Election Board, 4.9 million are first voters in this election.
I voted for Kemal Kılıçdaroğlu, of course, because I am a young person who wants to live in a democratic country. Now our country is not democratic. And because I want to change, I want to reshape my future with Kemal Kılıçdaroğlu, of course, because we believe in him. Because we saw current president for like almost 20 years.
Some said they voted to change the country, while some others said they voted to revive the legacy of the founder of Turkey.
Ben Cumhuriyet Halk Partisi'yim.
I will vote for CHP, the party that was created by Mustafa Kemal Atatürk. Atatürk said, I left you two legacies. The first is the Turkish Republic and the second is the Republican People Party.
Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan cast his vote in Istanbul. He said he is happy the election is going smoothly without any incinerators, especially in areas affected by the earthquake. Many believe Erdogan's presidency should not end, arguing Turkey in his era became a developed and modern country.
I will give my vote to President Recep Tayyip Erdogan and AKP. The most important reason is that in the past 21 years, he made Turkey one of the best countries in the world. He built roads, hospitals, manufactured our own defense system. This is the first government to work on manufacturing its own. What else do we want?
Many believe today's election will determine the future of Turkey's ruling system, especially with opposition candidate promising to bring back the country's parliamentary system if he became the president. Turkish people have cast their votes. While some here want everything to stay the way it is, others believe it is time to change, and the future of Turkey will be determined once election officials count the votes. Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
Palestinian children are the main victims of the Israeli attacks on the Gaza Strip. This report from Ola Lassi is about kids. Kids who can barely remember a time without sirens and a time without fear.
Any Israeli aggression on the Gaza Strip has proven that innocent children are the regime's main victims. Since the beginning of 2023, Israel has killed at least 25 Palestinian children in the occupied West Bank, occupied Al-Quds, and the Gaza Strip. The recent Israeli attacks on the Gaza Strip claimed the lives of six children.
My name is Nada Khalil Bahdini. My five-year-old sister Hajar was martyred along with my mom and dad days ago. I was under the rubble and I was screaming. After they pulled me out, they told me that they were killed. The last thing we did together was playing with the mobile.
Those kids who survived the Israeli missiles are now suffering from the horror and panic they experienced with every explosion. Tamim, the beloved child of his parents, whose heart was so little and fragile to endure the immense of Israeli airstrikes, fell victim of a panic attack.
There was a massive explosion nearby our house. My son screamed loudly along with his sister Judy. Moments later, the house became full of dust and smoke. Tamim was a heart patient. His condition required special needs. He screamed out of pain and started to hit his chest. He couldn't breathe and fainted. After hours in the ICU, my child died of panic.
These kids are examples of hundreds of Palestinian children who endure a grief bigger than their endurance. Children whose lives, families, houses, and memories were shattered in one Israeli airstrike.
I was heartbroken over a destroyed house, the place where I grew up, played and had joyous memories and dreams. I wept a lot. I searched for my school bag and couldn't find it. It's horrifying what I felt after the Israeli airstrikes that hit our house.
The repeated Israeli attacks on Gaza negatively influenced those who survived the airstrikes. Life in Gaza under the Israeli occupation causes them psychological problems and forces them to live in a non-ending state of trauma.
For the Palestinian children in Gaza, there is no P in PTSD, as they live in a state of constant fear of the next Israeli aggression, which affects every aspect of their lives and well-being. Each onslaught decimates them further. If you ask a 14-year-old child from Gaza, "How old are you?" he or she might answer, "7 Israeli military offensives." Gaza.
Yemenis have taken to the streets across the country to mark the 75th anniversary of the creation of the Israeli regime known as the Day of Nakba or Catastrophe. Rallies were held in the capital Sana'a as well as other major cities such as Sa'da and Al-Hudaydah to express solidarity with the Palestinians. The demonstrators condemned the expulsion of Palestinians from their homes and ethnic cleansing by the Israeli regime. They called on the international community to take action to stop Israeli aggression and expansionist policies. Nakba Day was also marked with similar rallies elsewhere across the world. Rallies were held in many cities across the world, including Vienna, Rotterdam, Paris, Berlin, and Toronto. The demonstrators also slammed the failure of the international community to take action against Israeli atrocities. In London, protesters chanted slogans denouncing the UK's role in the creation of the Israeli regime. The Nakba Day marks the creation of the Israeli regime in 1948. Zionists who had moved to Palestine from various countries drove over 750,000 Palestinians into exile and wiped off more than 500 towns and villages off the map.
It was a gathering of defiance and hope, a chance for pro-Palestinian organizations and supporters to remind the international community they have not forgotten about justice for Palestine. 75 years on from the catastrophe, there was an urgent message for the world.
Today, and our first message is one of solidarity to the Palestinian people, those across historic Palestine from the river to the sea, those in the diaspora, the Palestinians expelled in 1948 and their descendants, who today are marking what happened in 1948, the ethnic cleansing of Palestinians, the destruction of more than 500 Palestinian villages, but are also marking the Nakba not as a moment rooted in the past, but an ongoing process of colonization, a dispossession and oppression.
Ongoing Israeli aggression and injustices mean the Nakba is not simply a historic moment, but one that demands an immediate response to the current situation.
The Nakba is ongoing, and we have seen the latest threads in that tapestry of the Nakba woven in Gaza, once again suffering the raining of Israeli bombs.
The international community continues to fail the Palestinians, not just for their role in the facilitation of the ethnic cleansing and displacement of the people, but for their continued political blind eye, a blind eye that allows Israel to act with impunity in its subjugation and oppression of Palestinians day in, day out.
Britain's role in not just pushing through the Balfour Agreement, but London's current position as a staunch ally of Tel Aviv makes the demands of the marchers all the more pressing.
What we're asking for as a British public is sanction Israel. We're asking for international law to be upheld. If any other country was breaking this many laws this frequently on an international level, sanctions would be placed upon them without doubt. So we're asking for level playing field here, international law to be applied to Israel, sanction Israel now. The Nakba isn't a historical fact. It's a fact that's going on right now.
We want to see an end to UK-Israeli weapons trade going both directions, actually. It's not just a one-way street. We want to see an end to that. And we want to really call our government to account for its complicity, not only in the arms trade and so on, but the continuing repression within Gaza and within the occupied territories. Really, 75 years is way too long. It's 75 years too long, and we want to see the restoration of freedom and liberty to the Palestinian peoples, to their lands and to their state.
As Palestinians continue to resist the occupation with every resource available to them, those demonstrating are keen to show the spirit of solidarity across the globe remains steadfast. Amina Taylor, London.
From the disgrace of the Nakba to today's resistance, the 75th anniversary of the occupation of Palestine is a time to reflect on the long way the oppressed nation of Palestine has come in its struggle for freedom, while shedding light on the numerous instances of human rights violations committed by Israel in the Palestinian territories.
There are over 1,000 Palestinians currently jailed in administrative detention with no charge or no trial under a Zionist regime that can indefinitely extend their detention, leaving them jailed with no charge or no trial for years on end.
The issue of Palestine is the most important issue in the Muslim world, and Nakba is an occasion for all of us to condemn the atrocities against Palestinians. Resistance is the only way to liberate Palestine.
The Nakba has greatly influenced Palestinian culture, and now a new generation of Palestinians is ready to make the ultimate sacrifice in the fight for freedom.
Resistance has paid off. After years of resistance, now we have reached a point where there is no talk about the Greater Israel Project. That image of an invincible army has been shattered.
It's true that the Israeli regime has tried to create the impression that it's strong. We all know that they have the support of world powers. But today, the regime is facing lots of domestic problems. That's mainly the reason for the escalation of raids and attacks in the occupied territories and the Gaza Strip. It's a way to deviate attention from its internal issues. But the international community is now more aware than before.
Today, the word Nakba and what it stands for is known to all who are preoccupied by the Palestinian cause.
This year on May 15th, the United Nations will be holding a high-level special meeting to mark the 75th anniversary of the Nakba. This is the first time that the international body is marking the date, recognizing the historic injustice suffered by the Palestinian people. Gizumi Shahmadi, Tehran.
Turning elsewhere now, the administration of U.S. President Joe Biden has once again warned of catastrophic consequences for the nation's economy if the country defaults on its debt payments. The nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office has forecast that the country could default on its debts by June 15 if lawmakers fail to agree to raise current limits on government spending. For weeks, U.S. policymakers, bankers, and the White House have warned that the U.S. is on the brink of default, which could plunge the country into a recession and see millions of jobs lost. Democratic leaders are calling for the limit to be raised, but Republicans want spending cuts and other conditions to be agreed on first. U.S. national debt currently stands at around $31.5 trillion. A default would also trigger a global economic downturn. Thank you for staying tuned.
Bustle of life. The sound of living. Only sound will endure.
Hello.
IRIB English Radio.
In the United States, long lines have formed again next to the southern U.S. border wall in El Paso, Texas, as seen repeated in other parts of the southern U.S. border with Mexico, as migrants anticipated the end of a policy that has allowed immigration agents to quickly expel them from the United States. We take a look at the U.S. media's coverage of this issue. Please stay with us. The U.S. newspaper The Hill has covered this story and tells us more. A Texas bill creating a state-run border protection unit has been brought back to life. HB 20 would create a state immigration unit to arrest, apprehend, or detain persons crossing the Texas-Mexico border unlawfully, something that has traditionally been the preserve of the U.S. federal government. The state-run push comes alongside a broader Republican attack on what they characterize as President Joe Biden's open borders policy. While the Biden administration has heavily promoted its new enforcement measures at the border, and the Federal Border Patrol reports that encounters with migrants are a quarter below last year, Republicans, however, have described the situation at the U.S. southern border with Mexico in apocalyptic terms. Texas's Attorney General Ken Paxton wrote in a statement on Wednesday, 10th of May, that the brutal reality of Biden administration's agenda should shock the conscience of every American. President Biden's policies allow monstrous gang members, terrorists, human traffickers, drug dealers, and violent criminals into the country, and demonstrate that the president is willing to sacrifice American lives for his open borders agenda, Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton added. Paxton's comments came just before the expiration on Friday night of Title 42, a Trump-era piece of legislation that has been used 2.8 million times since March of 2020 to expel asylum seekers from the United States. On Thursday, 11th of May, the House of Representatives voted to pass HB 2, a sweeping bill that, among a great deal else, makes asylum applications more stringent, restarts construction of a Trump-era border wall, and reopens immigration prisons closed by the Biden administration. Another clause of the national bill would see unaccompanied children and minors safely and expeditiously returned to their country of origin. But with that bill facing near certain death in the U.S. Senate, and a President Biden veto, Texas is going it alone with House Bill 20, or HB 20, in a move that risks confrontation with the federal government should it pass. The bill has immigration advocates seeing a dire threat of their own. House Bill 20, or HB 20, is the most dangerous piece of border legislation we've seen, the Texas Civil Rights Project wrote in an April bill summary. The Texas bill faces a narrow window to passage. Democrats nearly scuttled it on procedural grounds last week, but Republicans successfully resurrected it this week, the Texas Tribune has reported. The new unit would be authorized to act only in the overwhelmingly Hispanic counties of the Texas-Mexico border, where they will be allowed to arrest, apprehend, or detain persons unlawfully crossing the Texas-Mexico border and deter persons from attempting to cross the border unlawfully. The bill would also give the state new legal powers that prosecutors could use against migrants. It sets up a Texas-only version of Title 42. Also, it makes it a felony crime for anyone to knowingly trespass on private land while entering the state, which effectively criminalizes entering the state of Texas outside a port of entry, according to the Texas Civil Rights Project. This makes an offense that used to be a misdemeanor into a felony on par with kidnapping. Website of American newspaper, the Texas Tribune, has also covered this story and tells us more. As the clock ticked down to the end of a policy used to expel migrants from the United States nearly 3 million times over the past 3 years, the lines formed again on a patch of American soil between the Rio Grande and the border wall in southern United States. Hundreds of migrants, men, women, and children, stood in ragged lines waiting near a gate in the wall for their return to pass through. They were watched by Border Patrol agents and National Guard members in fatigues. For a moment, no one moved. A group of four Venezuelan men with a boy and a Colombian couple with their two-year-old son waded across the shallow river and were turned back by National Border Guard. The migrants said the soldiers told them the border was closed and they should go to another area 5 miles east where agents may let them pass. The public health emergency order, known as Title 42, which has been largely used as an immigration enforcement policy to quickly expel migrants from the United States, including asylum seekers trying to enter the United States, ended late on Thursday night, 11th of May. In preparation, U.S. federal, state, and border officials across the roughly 2,000 miles of U.S.-Mexico border have implemented a series of policies to prepare for what they fear will be a chaotic crisis as thousands of migrants who have been forced to wait in Mexican border cities make a crucial decision. Follow the Biden administration's new rules and make an appointment to request asylum or try their luck crossing the U.S. border with Mexico en masse. In southern Texas, video footage from journalists on Wednesday, 10th of May, showed hundreds of immigrants gathering on the banks of the Rio Grande near Brownsville, Texas. In neighboring Hidalgo County, County Judge Richard Cortez issued a 7-day disaster declaration on Thursday. I have received credible information from officials with Customs and Border Protection that large groups of migrants are probing our international border in search of crossing points, he said. I have decided to declare this emergency as a first step in securing all available state and federal resources to ensure the health and safety of our residents. El Paso, Laredo, and Brownsville, Texas, have previously declared state of emergencies. On Wednesday, 10th of May, El Paso city officials converted two vacant middle schools into migrant shelters using federal money. After Thursday, 11th of May, immigration agents will seek to deport migrants who attempt to enter the country without first having set up an appointment to enter the United States through a port of entry, using a government cell phone app known as CBP-1. Migrants also have the option of applying for asylum at one of the new processing centers in Guatemala or in Colombia, which will give successful applicants the option to legally enter Canada, Spain, or the United States of America. Starting tonight, people who arrive at the border without using a lawful pathway will be presumed ineligible for asylum, Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas said in a statement late on Thursday, 11th of May. The border is not open. People who do not use available lawful pathways to enter the United States now face tougher consequences, including a minimum 5-year ban on re-entry and political criminal prosecution. A couple of hours before Title 42 was set to end, a federal judge in Florida blocked the Biden administration from carrying out a key part of its plan, paroling migrants into the country without a formal notice to appear in a court of law. The temporary restraining order came in response to a lawsuit by Florida's Attorney General. Border officials used parole during the Trump administration and under previous administrations. When the deadline came at 9:59 p.m. local time in El Paso, Texas, hundreds of migrants were still in line at the border wall gate, waiting for Border Patrol agents to apprehend them. Men stood in one line, women and children stood in another. Wherever agents took a small group of them through the gate, the migrants applauded and cheered. Earlier on Thursday, 11th of May, at a migrant camp in Ciudad Juarez, across the river from El Paso, Texas, Venezuelan migrant Richard Arcia, a 23-year-old, said he'll continue trying to use the app until he can get an asylum appointment. If he's successful, he said, he plans to go to New Jersey, where he has family members.
IRIB English Radio presents Viewpoints.
Viewpoints.
With the presence of different scholars.
The presence of different scholars. IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. Well, welcome to another episode of the program Viewpoints, an analysis on the thoughts and speeches of the Supreme Leader of Islamic Republic of Iran, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei. I am Atta, the host of this program. With me in the studio, we have two very special guest speakers from the Islamic House of Qom, Sayyid Mohsen and Brother Salim. Sayyid Mohsen, assalamu alaikum.
Alaykum as-salam wa rahmatullah.
And Brother Salim, assalamu alaikum to you.
Wa alaykum as-salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
From day one after Islamic Republic of Iran was founded, the late Imam Khomeini has always addressed the issue of Palestine as not only an important case for the Muslims, but whole freedom seekers, all the people who are justice seekers around the world. This has enlightened a kind of new light in the hearts of the people, not only Muslims, but so many people all around the world. But it's still the same question. Why so many Muslim lands? Because one of the main slogans of Islam must be defending the rights of the oppressed, of the mazlumin all around the world, mustazafin around the world. So why, as Sayyid said, hand in hand with the superpowers, some of the Muslim lands are, Brother Salah?
When we compare the Islam in Iran before revolution of Imam Khomeini, rahmatullah alayh, and after revolution, may this will be understood as well. Now we have to compare the old one government with the new one, which we have now, Islamic government in Iran.
Yes.
This looks like the same thing happens in those Islamic countries. Islamic countries now is like Islamic country of Iran before Imam Khomeini.
Mm-hmm.
The culture of Islam is in the mind, but the government against of the culture.
Mm-hmm.
So it can affect the people idea, the people or understanding of what of Islam, what is Islam, what is really, what is the real of Islam, what is the really Islam, what we say in English.
Yes.
So they will say we are Muslim, but they think the Islam or the Muslim should just go to pray and fast and give zakat maybe.
Yes.
For those Shia homes.
Yes.
And this is enough.
Okay.
So some people in the world who we call them Muslims are Muslim by the names.
Okay.
By their names only, and they are not be affected by really the basis of Islam, and they don't know what is really Islam says about being Muslim. It's just because we have the kind of types of what we call performing namaz or
yes.
say praying
yes.
or fasting or all of these are you with what with your God.
Yes.
And we have another thing, you with other people,
mm-hmm.
like in Nahjul Balagha,
yes.
the people are like you sometime as what, as a human being, and others are brother of you as what, as a Muslim like you. So according to this idea, how you are going to act to your brother if something happened to him, and how you will act if there is someone is not your brother, as what a brother, as a Muslim brother,
yes, yes, yes.
but is a brother of what?
Yes.
Of kind of you. You have the same kind of what humanity, is a human being.
I could remember the sentence of Imam Ali alayhi salam to Malik al-Ashtar when he was sent as the governor to Egypt that, Malik, listen, the people you are going to are either your brother in faith or brother in humanity.
Yeah.
Big lesson, yeah. okay? So now the case is that, okay, so many Christians living over there, they are being killed. They are our brothers in humanity. So what's happening? So still, the big question is that these people are killed. And today, you know, in the, for example, 23 years ago, maybe there was not so many footage of the video or the pictures of the people being killed. But now just look and search for Palestine on the Google. You know, the first thing that comes are the innocent children that are being killed. It's all in Palestine. In Palestine, now in Syria, okay? You can see that Israel, that's right, fired missiles on Syria's capital with full power, and is proud of being, you know, attacking even the lands of other countries. What kind of geopolitics is this? The new world, I mean, that we are talking about.
So the real, what we've said, the real Islam in another thing, and what we believe, our Savior, another thing else.
Mm-hmm.
And since there is no, the basics of teaching of Islam in those countries is what is Islam, pure Islam. It's not Islam what we believe. Sometimes I believe this is Islam. Like what I told you, before the Imam Khomeini revolution of Iran, how people of Iran were living.
Yes.
And after revolution, what do they believe in now? Now they believe what? To defend other people, it's not only Muslims. They are defending other people, other nations around the world.
Yes.
Because of what? Of the new idea of Islam which came to what? To this nation.
Yes.
Before that, they believe just what they say. You want to go to disco? Go to disco.
Mm-hmm.
You want to go to what? To pray? Go to the mosque.
Mm-hmm.
So you are free. So this is the Islam before revolution, and the new Islam what we have now, the Islam, the real one, which tells you what? Tells you the real of Islam, it has a way, and is a straight way. Mm-hmm. It's not different ways. We have to follow sometime this one, sometime that one.
Mm-hmm.
And which one you will follow will be guided.
Okay.
It's not this idea.
That's all.
Maybe
right.
This is the main point
of
being these what? Chaoses.
That's
around
right.
the world, and all people are quiet.
That's right.
Mainly, I'm not saying all, mainly.
But there is still a contradiction, Sayyid, over here. From one side, we could see the Arab, I don't call it Muslim Israel ties, the Arab Israel ties. Most of the Arabs call themselves so-called Muslims. But from the other side, do you believe that the presence of Israel in this region helps very much the case of Islamophobia around the world?
Well, obviously, for sure, because Israel is on the main list of, you know, the enemies of Islam and the Islamic phobia since the revolution has happened.
Mm-hmm.
After that, the very first, we can say the first enemies which we can list is the Israeli regime. And since Imam Khomeini also has pointed that this Zionist regime should be, you know, should be vanished, or it should be eliminated from this land.
Yes.
And Muslims or the Palestinians, because Imam Khomeini is not using the word Muslim as well.
Mm-hmm.
That's another thing which we need to consider.
Yes.
Palestinians.
Yes.
Within Palestine, we have Jews,
yes.
we have Christians, we have Muslims.
Yes.
All three religions, people of three faiths, are living in the Palestinian land.
Yes.
So basically, Imam Khomeini has talked about the freedom of the Palestinians, not the Muslims.
Yes.
So it's not a matter of Muslims.
Yes.
That's the first thing. The other thing is Islam, as brother has beautifully explained, that Islam after the revolution, what Imam Khomeini has revived, basically, which he, you know, he reminded us that the Islam is about raising your voice against the occupation, against the injustice, and against the, we can say, like, you know, the terrorism.
Yes.
So all these things make us to raise our voice against the Zionist regime, which is in the Palestinian lands, which has taken this land from them. On the other hand, obviously, we need to also consider that this Zionist regime, because, you know, they are rooted in, like, they have roots in the business. They were strong. They, you know, own a lot of, you know, companies which have, you know, which are backing different, we can say, like, you know, groups in the political groups in different countries financially. That's why we can see, like, these people are like that. On the other hand, obviously, this is not only about the Arabs and the Zionist regime. This is about the Islam. And the thing which I think mentioned before, that since they believe in a savior,
yes.
and that savior is against the Jesus Christ,
yes.
that savior is against the Imam Mahdi. So mm-hmm. basically, the Christians and the Muslims, they both are the threats for the Zionist regime.
Yes.
If today the American regime or the American officials, they don't understand this, tomorrow they will find that how this Zionist regime will back to them
and obviously it will fight against the Christianity within the American lands. And the other point is because, you know, most of the countries, the people that we have, as brother also mentioned, yes, about the beliefs and the being a Muslim, it's basically the concept of secularism.
Yes.
We have secular Muslims.
Yes.
We have secular Christians.
Okay.
They think that the religious rituals are different from what we need to practically live or believe and do in our life. So this secularism has separated,
yes,
the roots of religion from the Muslim lands,
okay,
from the Muslims.
That's
but
right.
Yes, that is true, that Israel is the Zionist regime is the basically threat for the Muslims, especially, and it is spreading the Islamophobia. On the other hand, we can see, like it's been proved,
yes,
that they have the plotted people. They have many people who they hired who are working on the social media, you know, posting.
It was even disclosed that they have helped ISIS.
Yes.
I mean, the Israelis and the Zionists have helped ISIS.
On the social media,
a big,
yes,
shock to the world.
On the social media, they're working on this thing.
Yes.
They are, you know, before the logarithm.
Yes.
Before the algorithm.
Yes.
Basically, they were having people, plotted people who were posting different things against, yes, the Islam.
Yes.
You know, the disputed issues between the Shia Sunnis, they were done by Israeli. Even in Pakistan, let me tell you one more thing.
Yes.
That one of our, you know, the Pakistani anchors,
yes,
TV anchors, he was giving this interview, and he said that he met a guy in Dubai,
mm-hmm,
who used to be a mullah or the imam of one of the mosques,
yes,
in one of the cities of Pakistan. And when he met him, he saw that he's drinking alcohol.
Oh.
And he asked him, like, you were the imam of that mosque, how you do this? And he said that I'm basically a Zionist, and I was there to do my job, and my job is finished, and I'm retired now. So he's spending his life in Dubai right now. He was a spy.
Okay.
He was a plotted person. You know, the head of ISIS.
Yes.
Who is he?
Yeah.
You know, the
Al-Baghdadi?
Al-Baghdadi.
Of Askil. They say he was killed.
Yeah, he was killed, but he was actually a Zionist.
Really?
He wasn't a Muslim.
This is a big claim, man. Okay, how do you prove it?
I can do this claim.
You can do that? Okay, that's right.
No, he was Zionist. He has rooted. Obviously, there were documents which, uh-huh, you know, the...
He was trained at least.
He was trained at,
okay,
least at that place. So,
okay,
you know, if someone has been trained, even, you know, about the people in the part of Kurdistan of Iran,
yes,
who are doing the terrorist activities...
Yes.
There are documents right now.
Okay.
We have documentaries. There are the proofs now, mm-hmm, that they are trained in such a, like in the Israel.
That's right.
And,
okay,
they're trained by them.
Okay. Thank you, Omar Said Mohsen and Brother Salam, for a nice elaboration. Inshallah, Palestine will be free. Al-Quds will be free. And inshallah, this genocide is being stopped. And the freedom seekers, justice seekers all around the world, every day, they are active too. I mean, we have Jabhat al-Haq, Jabhat al-Batil. Of course, Jabhat al-Haq is also active, you know, on his own side, regardless of the race, language, religion, or anything. The late Imam Khomeini's wish is becoming true, inshallah. Thank you very much, Sayyid Mohsen and Brother Salam, for a nice elaboration.
Yeah.
And thank you much, dear listeners, for listening to us. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.ir, Call of Islam page. To another episode, God bless you all. Palestine will be free.
Every day we tell each other that this day will be the last, and tomorrow we all can go home free, and all this will finally end. Palestine, tomorrow will be free. Palestine, tomorrow will be free.
wipe away my tears. That's why I will cry. I feel scared, but I won't show my fears. I keep my head high, deep in my heart. I never have any doubt the battle is fine. Tomorrow will be free. Palestine, tomorrow will be free.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/parstodayen. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/parstodayenglish.
The Limelight.
A global coalition has been formed to remove the US dollar from international trade. Iran has joined this action, providing a unique opportunity for the country to break the enemy's monetary and financial magic. From China and Brazil to Russia and India, they all agree on the same decision. The US dollar cannot be trusted. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this issue. Please stay with us. CNN has covered this story and tells us more. The United States Treasury Secretary has warned that economic sanctions imposed on other countries like Russia and Iran threaten the dominance of the US dollar in the global economic market. Janet Yellen said on Sunday, 16th of April, "There is a risk when we use financial sanctions that are linked to the role of the US dollar that over time it could undermine the hegemony of the dollar," she told the networks. Fareed Zakaria in an interview, "Of course, it does create a desire on the part of China, Russia, Iran and others to find an alternative." She, however, claimed that the dollar is used as a global currency for reasons that are not easy for other countries to find an alternative with the same properties. Janet Yellen claimed that sanctions are an extremely important tool, all the more so when used by the United States and its allies as a coalition partners acting together to impose those sanctions. "The global trend of substituting the US dollar with local currencies in the trade of goods and transactions has been on the rise in recent years, with various countries hoping to reduce their dependence on Washington and preventing it from further weaponizing its global dollar dominance." Observers cite China, Iran, Russia, and Venezuela as cases in point when it comes to conducting one's economic affairs and trade and important transactions independent of the greenback. They say powerful countries such as China, Russia, and the European Union are major players in the de-dollarization process today. These countries not only can avoid being subject to U.S. jurisdiction and sanctions in many cases, but also weaken Washington's ability to remain the most dominant global power. The Washington Post has also covered this story and tells us more. With the emergence of China as a global power, the role of the US dollar as a payment currency has been threatened. According to some analysts, China is developing a cross-border interbank payment system based on the yuan that will link up with the payment systems in other developing countries. With the passage of time, this will reduce the chokehold of the US dollar in the SWIFT messaging system. The most recent of the deals struck on the de-dollarization process took place recently between China and Brazil. The two countries agreed to conduct trade transactions in their national currencies, leaving out the US dollar as an intermediary. The deal came after China and France agreed to conduct their first energy trade in Chinese yuan. China has already reached similar currency deals with other countries, including Russia. It is worth mentioning that the Chinese yuan has surpassed the euro to become the second largest currency in the foreign reserves of Brazil, South America's biggest country. Not only did South American countries like Brazil ditch the US dollar in their transactions and move towards China's yuan, since the beginning of the Ukraine war and the vicious campaign against Moscow, including Western sanctions and excluding Moscow from much of the global financial system, Russians have also turned to the Chinese yuan as their currency of choice. Of course, Russia started prioritizing the de-dollarization process in 2014, following the annexation of Crimea and in response to Western sanctions. According to media reports, the yuan has replaced the US dollar as the most traded currency in Russia, with almost all the big banks offering services and deposits in the Chinese yuan. As Russian President Vladimir Putin described the outcome of his meetings with his Chinese counterpart, President Xi Jinping, in Moscow, he said, "We're in favor of using the Chinese yuan for settlements between Russia and the countries of Asia, Africa, and Latin America." The website of Press TV has also covered this story and tells us more. The European Union has also been circumventing US sanctions through the use of euros in its trade with the Islamic Republic of Iran. According to figures by the EU Statistical Office, the Eurostat, European Union's exports to Iran increased 7% year-on-year in January of 2023, while trade exchanges between the two sides exceeded 400 million euros over the same month. Several countries in West Asia and North Africa have also started to move away from the greenback in recent months. Countries like Iraq, United Arab Emirates, Egypt, and Saudi Arabia. A report published by Elements newsletter said that Brazil and Argentina have been discussing the creation of a common currency since the beginning of 2023. At the time, the United Arab Emirates and India study the option of using rupees to trade non-oil commodities. Moreover, Indian Commerce Secretary Sunil Bathwal said Indian rupees will be used in trade between countries that are facing a shortage of US dollars or currency failure. He said trade between India and Malaysia can now be settled in INR. The report also said that Saudi Arabia, for the first time in almost five decades, is open to trade in currencies besides the US dollar. Recently, Iran's top security official said the move to reduce the use of dollar in regional and international transactions, joined by several countries, would minimize the West's dominance over the global economy. The Secretary of Iran's Supreme National Security Council, Ali Shamkhani, cited the initiatives that have been finalized between Iran and Russia in the final sector and banking exchanges to fund joint projects as an effective paradigm for neutralizing the West's unlawful sanctions against the two countries. The Sputnik News Agency has also covered this story and tells us more. Deputy Chairman of Russia's State Duma, Alexander Babakov, said on 30th of March that the BRICS bloc of emerging economies, that is Brazil, Russia, India, China and South Africa, was working on developing a new currency that will be presented at the organization's upcoming summit in Durban, South Africa. The bloc is working on finding ways to reduce dependence on Western currencies, especially the US dollar. The deputy chairman of Russia's State Duma, Alexander Babakov, said on the sidelines of the Russian-Indian Strategic Partnership for Development and Growth Business Forum, he said, the transition to settlements in national currencies is a first step. The next step is to provide the circulation of digital or any other form of a fundamentally new currency in the nearest future. I think that at the BRICS Leaders Summit, the readiness to realize this project will be announced. Such works are underway. BRICS member states account for more than 40% of the global population and around a quarter of the global GDP. Recently, former US President Donald Trump said during remarks to the National Rifle Association, he said, the US dollar will soon no longer be the world's standard currency. Donald Trump said, our currency is crashing and will soon no longer be the world's standard, which will be our greatest defeat in the past 200 years. Even though many economists say no other currency can dominate over the US anytime soon, prominent economists, including American economist Nouriel Roubini, who predicted the financial crisis of 2008, do not rule out the eventual demise of the US dollar as a reserve currency within a decade.
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.